Hello and welcome to Keyframe as part of the Geek Show podcast, the place for all places animation, including anime, cartoons, and various bits and bobs elsewhere. As always, we have Rob.
Hello.
Tucky.
Hi.
And Lewis.
Hiya.
Was that your sexy hi there, Tucky?
I don't know. I just kind of slumped into the cushions and was like, yeah. It's going to be a relaxing podcast today.
That reminds me, Tucky and Mark, I am not like Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, what?
Oh, I forgot all about that.
Basically, last time Rob went off for a break for a bit and we said that his first sauna would be Pepe Le Pew.
I am not that French. The skunk part, maybe, but I am not that French.
We had 5 minutes or something. I can't remember what the whole conversation was. It was just something like, was that when we were talking about Disney or something? And then Rob had a knock at the door and we were like, oh yeah, it's Mickey Mouse came round or something like that.
You two just went off on one. While I was editing the show, I just suddenly started going off on one. I was like, what the hell are you two talking about? So, today we're going to kick things off with a bit of an interesting discussion. We've known for a while that the anime industry in the UK hasn't really been the healthiest, you know, in terms of distribution, in terms of what it is. And that's come to light recently because of some tweets from one of the distributors, and they're claiming, what was the percentage?
50 to 70% decrease in DVD and Blu-ray sales, and that was for their specific releases, what they do. I don't know if that was overall, but I'm imagining everybody will be hurting the same.
Well, from how I see it, there's several factors that come into play. Number one is the rise of streaming, which has been a big, big game changer. I mean, and not just in terms of the UK market, in terms of global distribution.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, key players like Crunchyroll and Funimation, they just seem to be going from strength to strength overall.
One of the things that bugs me about the whole streaming side of things, right, has to do with the infrastructure that you got with regards to the internet. Because over in the States, in general, in the cities, you have a better internet infrastructure. And in Japan, you have a much better internet infrastructure than we do here in the UK.
Oh, exactly. It's obviously, there's still places in the UK that don't even get any kind of signal whatsoever.
Exactly. And I'm thinking that might actually be a factor because there are people who are streaming, and I used to have internet, ADSL broadband here, and I was getting something like 3 meg download.
Yeah.
And that was it. And it was really, in this day and age, it was no better than being on dial-up. And now I'm on a 50 meg connection, I'm much happier. But the thing is, that has to be rolled out across the UK, because when you're streaming, you need a good internet connection for you to actually stream properly and actually enjoy what you're watching.
Without they keep trying to sell you Netflix now, so...
Yeah, well, Netflix is a streaming service. You've got Amazon Prime, you've got all these other ones, and then you've got the anime-related ones, like Funimation now and Crunchyroll.
Animex as well.
Animex as well, yeah. Is it Animex?
Yeah. I don't know. I've still got the original PS4 for Animex.
Animax, that's it. Not Animex.
But, yeah, that's the other one who kind of like the person in question who was tweeting was kind of having a rant saying that they don't have any subscribers via that anymore. So it still exists, but it doesn't exist.
Schrodinger's streaming.
Thing is, the streaming services are there, but it's really difficult to get into that game now because you're up against giants, effectively.
And exactly.
If you want to get into streaming, then you're going to have to make a deal with them.
Or you're going to have to spend millions of dollars and build like networking relationships with Japanese companies from scratch.
Didn't they attempt to do a streaming service for the UK at one point? It was Anime UK or something like that? I can't remember.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. That was, I think that's actually still on my PS3 or something. I can't remember what it's called.
I can't remember that.
I'm not familiar with it personally.
It was very, very short-lived. I think it like appeared probably maybe 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And then it was like a kind of like, wow, and then it had a few few series here and there, and then it kind of like disappeared as quick as it came. It was just, it was probably a 3-4 month kind of thing, and then that was it.
Yeah,
basically what I thought anime or Netflix was going to be.
I mean, other people have tried it. I mean, bigger companies. I mean, I know the Nintendo has got a random anime channel on the 3DS.
And Inazuma and all the episodes of Pokemon. Aye.
Yeah. Like, considering that it's apparently, like, not oversaturated, but it's a market that's hard to get into, but all of these companies are trying to get into the anime streaming service. Can't we just accept that anime is, like, cool now? Like, people are trying to make money off of it, so there must be something there.
Yeah, I mean, we're not disagreeing with that.
Anime is still very much a niche thing here in the UK. It's not so much overseas, but here in the UK is still very much a niche thing. And I don't know why we as a nation are xenophobic almost when it comes to anime, when it comes to cartoons in general, which is really weird. Historically, if you look at some of the stuff that we were releasing in the UK, we didn't really have an idea of what we were releasing at one point, so we let loose Legend of the Overfiend and various things like that.
Is it terrible? Is it terrible?
You don't want to watch it.
How far back?
Like, you can't just like quote a name that I've never heard of, tell me I don't want to watch it, and expect me to just be like, oh, that's fine. Okay, I guess I'll completely forget you ever said it.
Don't Google it.
He's got a new name.
Well, I'm going to, but unfortunately I can't remember the name, so I think you've won this one. Legend of the Overlord or something.
Or that's thing. Close enough. Don't Google it.
Urosuki Doji is a Japanese erotic horror series written and illustrated by Toshiro Maeda.
Yep. The godfather of tentacle porn.
And he did La Blue Girl as well.
Yeah, he did La Blue Girl as well as probably several others.
La Blue Girl, the only anime you can buy in Poundland.
The only hentai that actually got into PSP.
I know, it's really weird. But this is what I mean. We have this weird relationship with anime in that we will allow certain things, but when it comes to anime as an industry, we're just like, no, we can't have that, Oh, it's filled with this and violence and fan service.
Blood and guts and boobs and butts, and it's just going to make your head explode.
Yeah, basically. But then we do things like releasing High School DD on a 15 rating. And we're talking about the uncensored version. This is why we have this weird relationship with anime in particular. But with animation in general, I mean, Wallace and Gromit and the whole Nick Park stuff, that is, for us, Oscar-winning material. But we seem to think that that is the limit of what the UK animation industry can do.
In my mind, it's less a matter of people thinking, oh, we can't get any further. And it's more just like, well, this is what's good. And that's that.
It's
not very flexible, is it?
Yeah, it's a very narrow view of what animation actually is.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the reasons why anime doesn't do as well in the UK as it does in other countries. Our animation industry is virtually non-existent. If you look at countries that have a decent animation industry, they are generally far better and far superior to the UK when it comes to distribution of animation in general.
Yeah.
Whereas, so you're talking Japan, France, and the USA mainly?
Well, not just France. Russia has a decent animation industry. Germany has a decent animation industry. France has an excellent animation industry. Spain has a decent animation industry. Italy has a decent animation industry. You have various countries like that across the world who have decent animation industries, and their interaction with animation is at a much higher level than here in the UK. We have Claymation from Nick Park, and that's pretty much it. Oh, we have the stuff that's coming from the guys who did Song of the Sea. Beautiful movie. Really well animated. Are they English? Are they based in the UK? Or are they Irish?
I think they're Irish. The thing is, with the UK industry, animation, it still is quite expensive to run.
Yeah.
And the government have their way of, we'll cut all funding to the arts because this bank is in trouble. The bonuses aren't quite high enough for these bankers.
Yeah.
So, you know, these creative type socialist, communist ones, they don't deserve it. It's that thing, like we're saying, going back to the whole, the industry's on its knees.
Yeah.
This relates to the companies like Anime Limited, Animetsu, Manga UK, MVM. These companies have such a shoestring budget. And these are people, these are businessmen, these are entrepreneurs who have said, you know what, this might be a niche market, but I'm going to go for it. And they've sat there and they have.
Yeah.
They've put their whole livelihoods on the line just to bring in this animation from Japan. And there's no support there for them.
Yeah.
The fans are their support, and that's all they've got. And well, it's got the time where Brexit has came in, and the home entertainment section, where they do the DVD releases, the collector's editions, all of them DVDs and Blu-ray discs are printed in Poland.
Yeah. At this point in time, the UK industry is facing probably the biggest crisis it's ever had. And we've gone over one of the reasons. It's just the animation industry in general in the UK, which has a knock-on effect on how we view animation, how the general public view animation. That's one of the reasons why, when it came to the Ghost in the Shell movie, I actually hoped it'd do well. Obviously, it didn't, but part of that was because of the backlash from fans who obviously don't understand sometimes.
Yeah, stuff like that doesn't help, to be honest, as
well. They were so enamored with the whitewashing controversy, which wasn't really a controversy. You know, Japanese fans had more of an issue with Takeshi Kitano being cast as the section chief, and they didn't mind the fact that, Scarlett Johansson was playing the major. They thought that was great casting. They had more of an issue with Takeshi Kitano playing the section chief.
If we're talking about that, then it's just like, if you look at it from so many different angles, it's not a problem. If you look at it from like a, you know, strictly pragmatic angle, it's not a problem.
What you have is the same old problem that you have time and time again. It's the same old problem that we've had for years. You have a bunch of idiot fans who are getting angry at something that they actually have no business being angry about. It's a sideways criticism of the anime industry in general, is one of the things that affects the sales of DVDs and also the number of people watching it online. Because
you said that, because again, it's not good for the industry for the very people who enjoy it to be criticizing it for nothing.
Yeah.
Especially, it just gives it also impression that the fan base isn't very approachable.
Yeah, but this is the thing. You have these communities online for anime. Stuff like Anime Planet, My Anime List. You know, there's various forums and various groups on Google Plus and Facebook and wherever you want to go, right? And there's tons of nice people on there, but all it takes is a few bad apples who basically go around picking fights with people, and immediately the entire community has been tarred with the same brush. We're all like that. They are the minority. It's just that they're the vocal minority. It makes it sound like there's a lot more of them than there actually are. And a lot of the people, I mean, I've been on MAL for 10 years, My Anime List, for 10 years, right? I've seen pretty much all the changes that an online community can have. I've seen the trolls. I've seen people making death threats just because somebody wrote a bad review of a show, right? Yeah, I know, but these are actual things that happened. And that's how seriously some people take it. And they don't have a reason to take it that seriously.
It's because they're online. Online gives them that safety. You're behind a screen.
Exactly.
Nothing can hurt you if you're sitting in front of your computer.
But what they don't realise is they're hurting the very industry that they claim to love.
Agree with that.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, obviously, I've been pretty quiet for the whole thing. I have been noting a few things that I have noticed with the anime industry in the UK. It's not just my opinion, and that is opinion of other people. And sometimes it just feels like with distribution, it's very difficult to go against it.
Yeah. There isn't really that much of a choice. You get what you're given here.
Exactly. And one of the issues, I think the biggest issue is that anime, especially now, I mean, we've got all of the classics. We've got the ones that people talk about time and time again. But the problem is that a lot of these DVDs and Blu-rays are coming out years after they've came out. So, for example, I'm going to use the last season, the season before, where the biggest things was like Yuri on Ice, Drifters, Keijo, March Comes in Like a Lion, and Classical Lloyd, whatever. Yeah. I can't remember what else. Was Kimono and Friends that one? But we're not going to see them until maybe next year, the end of next year. Yeah. And the issue is that most of, if not all of those fandoms are going to be dead by then.
Yep.
And it's true.
The problem is that this is happening because obviously Japan don't want people to reverse import because it is very, very expensive to buy DVDs in Japan. But it's like, we're kind of knocked on because it's like, yeah, we we've got this, but we're sitting on it for another 2 years before we're going to do anything.
Thing is, it's not just expensive to buy DVDs in Japan. It's ridiculously expensive to buy them here.
Oh, it is. I'm using Konosuba, the first disc of Season 2. I was quite interested because I had a little game included in it.
Yeah.
And it was going to cost, I think, I can't remember if it was 40 or 50 to import it. And that was for the first, I think it was the first two episodes because it's only a 10-episode series. And it's like, yeah, to buy the full set, you're gonna have to pay like £300.
Yep.
Which, yeah, that's obviously an issue for them. But I mean, when it comes down to our sides as well, I mean, what's coming out next month? I mean, we've got One Punch Man, we've got Prison School, we've got Overlord. We've just recently done stuff like Shimonetta, and all of those titles are titles from 2 years ago when some of them were kind of popular, and stuff like One Punch Man, Prison School, and one or two others, they will have the diehard fans who will still go out and pay £40 for the DVD. But general person who watched it 2 years ago isn't going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to rush out and buy this DVD, because no, they've watched it on Crunchyroll ages ago. Each season is compromising of 30 to 40 to sometimes 60 or 70 different series. So all the people are doing, they're jumping off One Punch Man, and then next week they're jumping onto something else. I can't even remember what came out after One Punch Man, but it was
Mob Psycho. Mob Psycho was much better.
The week after, but yeah, it's kind of like, it's literally went from like Yuri on Ice and Keijo to Dragon Maid to Attack on Titan. There is no gap in it. It's like literally, I like this one. Okay. And it's like afterwards, it's like, nope, I'm not really. I was into that back then. And then it's like the DVD comes around two years later, and it's like, oh yeah, I like that.
But that's again one of the reasons why streaming services are kicking the ass of physical distribution. You get it pretty much within weeks with a streaming service, which is one of the reasons why Crunchyroll and Funimation now, well, not so much Funimation now, but Crunchyroll mainly, have been doing so well, because anime fans automatically turn to Crunchyroll. But the thing is, Crunchyroll doesn't have everything.
Well, it doesn't. But the other thing I'm thinking of as well is that, like I said, take last season. I mean, I really enjoyed a lot of the stuff that came out. I mean, I enjoyed Drifters. I enjoyed March Comes In Like a Lion. I enjoyed Classicaloid. And I enjoyed Keijo. And out of all of those, the only one I would even consider buying on DVD is Keijo. Because the others were like, oh yeah, I like that, but I'm not going to pay £40 for it.
We talked about all the things that are like working against the anime industry, but then there's the anime industry itself. It's just, there's a lot of stuff that comes out that isn't that amazing. There's a lot of like anime out there that spend all your time telling you stuff and not showing you it. So it can be just a drag to watch, which, you know, to some degree can refer to some of the big animes like Naruto and that.
When you get right down to it, what you have is, and I've said this for a long time, anime is an industry where you have very little in the way of originality. You have a lot in the way of adaptation. Mm-hmm. And right now we're going through this massive trend of adapting light novels, video games, and manga, and sometimes even Western comics, into anime. There's a show coming out soon called In a Different World with My Smartphone, because the different world theme is very popular right now. One of the problems right now is you have an anime industry that's so saturated with adaptations, and you just mentioned that the only one you'd buy is Keijo. When you get right down to it, you wouldn't even need to buy Keijo. You could just buy the manga.
Oh, exactly. Or I can just watch it on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you wanted to own Keijo in any way, in any form, you could just buy the manga and watch the anime version on Crunchyroll. So why would you buy the DVDs? Because you've got an alternative version of it, which is much cheaper and much easier to get hold of.
Exactly. And this is the same in Japan. This, people say, oh yeah, I don't buy Dragon Ball Z because it's too expensive. All I've done is just bought all of Dragon Ball, the manga, because it's like a fraction of the price.
Exactly. And that's what's happening as well. The anime industry is basically killing itself by doing so much in the way of adaptation. And I understand it's an easy way for them to make money and to keep their heads above water, but it's also what's killing them.
Yeah.
And that I've been saying for a long, long time. I think I've been saying that for about 20 years now. And nobody really listens. And now you've got the situation where I think about half of the shows that are coming out every season are adaptations.
Yeah. Or the base, I mean, it's probably more than that.
Yeah, it's probably more than that now.
I'd probably say it's probably 75%
But the thing is,
adaptations or the sequels to...
Yeah, it's pretty much guaranteed it's going to either be based on a video game, a light novel, a manga, or the sequel of an existing series.
But I'd imagine that's probably got to do with the Japanese animation industry, because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you want to make an anime, you got it on like a slot that isn't that popular, you kind of want the stuff to sell. You know, why sit there and create an original idea and take a chance when you can take an established series that people like, hope that it does well, and then sell the stuff?
Some of the best anime that have come out of Japan have been original works. When I say best, I mean the ones that have made the most money.
Well, with the Japanese industry, there was recently a bubble where, like, all the shows were being made and whatnot, and that bubble's burst.
Yeah.
And where it's starting to filter through now. I mean, the UK industry side of it, I think we're like tertiary.
Yeah.
It filters through Japan, then it filters through to America and then other markets. And then we get whatever's left at the bottom of that barrel. And that's mainly why we're screwed, because we can see, like in Japan, crap, the bubble's burst. We're just waiting for that wave to hit us.
Yeah.
And speaking about, I mean, sorry for us to sit here and like just say like, oh, well, obviously the dying industry, they're going to struggle, probably to go out of business. I mean, what would we do as people? How would we save the UK anime industry?
Well, hypothetically, there are certain things you can do straight away if you wanted to fix the anime industry, full stop, and have the knock-on effect being fixing the UK industry. Number one, convince the anime studios once and for all that they are no longer playing in a Japan-only market. They are playing in a global market. So start making shows that cater to Western audiences as well, because that is where your money is, right? If you can start making shows that cater to Western audience, you can start making money from merchandising in a big way. Let's put it this way. Stan Lee, his first foray into anime was a series called Hero Man. Part of it was him basically saying to Marvel and DC, this is how you get into anime. This is what you do, right? I understand this industry better than you guys. I've been around stuff like this all my life, right? I am basically the guru sitting on the mountain. Give me an orange robe and shave my head. That's Stan Lee. So he does Hero Man, which is basically a boy and his robot story, okay? And now he's doing this thing called The Reflection. But on both occasions, he's basically taking something that he's familiar with and revamping it, but when he takes it to Japan, he's getting those studios to make it palatable for a Western audience. Right. Which means when it comes to the West, you know, you can sit there and watch it, and it's not automatically alienating you by having Shinto shrines everywhere and stuff like that. You see what I mean? It's not automatically saying this. Now, I'm not saying that those things shouldn't exist in Japanese anime, but have these shows that cater to the West. Have some fantasy shows that cater to the West, stuff like that. You see?
Yeah.
That's one way to fix the industry.
Yeah.
And that will then have a knock-on effect. If you take the likes of Illumination, DreamWorks, Disney, that sort of thing, when they make shows, they make them for the lowest common denominator. They make them for everybody. So anyone can watch a Disney movie. Anyone can watch an Illumination movie. We need a fundamental change in the way that anime is made and what type of anime are being made.
Well, that's difficult. We're, like we say, with the UK, we are the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
We've got to climb that figurative mountain to get to even just to get like Japanese studios to know we exist.
Yeah,
and they will only listen to money.
Yeah,
and this
exactly.
is the problem. The majority of anime fans are poor.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I bemoan the lack of a UK animation industry, because we have no alternative. We have no homegrown alternative unless it's Wallace and Bloody Gromit. And I hate to come back to that. The thing is, I hate to come back to Wallace and Gromit all the time, but when you get right down to it, what alternatives do we have to anime in terms of animation that's from the UK? Nothing.
None. Cartoon Network's only got American shows.
Exactly. Where's all the stuff from the UK? We have a history that goes back thousands of years longer than the US. So why are we importing all of our stories from the US? Anyway, just to finish off then. I'll put my idea out there. Any other ideas for saving the UK anime industry?
Force everybody to get Crunchyroll. And I mean, this is more directed at the people who turn around and go, oh, Crunchyroll, oh, you got to pay for that. No, you can get it for free, but you got to watch ads. And then they're just like, oh, no, I'll just illegally download it instead.
Well, no, this is another problem that we've got, because the UK is still getting out. I was on Funimation, and I rarely go on my Funimation account for some reason. I'm paying like £5 a month for it, and I'm rarely going on it. The Disastrous Life of Psyche Kun.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that I watched. And they don't have the English dub. They've just got like the Japanese. But I went on, and it comes up like suggestion. Oh, do you want to watch Dragon Ball Super? I'm like, oh, I didn't know they had that on. Click on it. This isn't available in your territory.
This goes back to that person that we discussed at the very beginning who has all these IPs and won't sell them to have them distributed. That particular company has Dragon Ball Super and One Piece.
And the one true One Piece. And the thing is, I've been on a wild goose chase for the One Piece property. Yeah. I mean, the wildest of wild goose chases, because for SunnyCon, I wanted the movie Gold. Because Michelle Knott, she's a character in it. I thought, you know what? I'll have Gold. It's like a little special screening. So I contacted Michelle and says, so could you, like, you know, work your way in and try and get us a copy just for Sean? And she's like, sorry, you know, I'd love to, but don't have that kind of power. I'm like, okay, then. And she's like, well, why didn't you contact Funimation's marketing team? So I contact them. They get back to us. Sorry, we haven't got the rights for the United Kingdom audience. I'm like, okay, then. And they're like, oh, contact Toei, because nobody's got the rights for the UK distribution of One Piece.
Yeah.
So I contacted Toei thinking, get in there, I can get the rights to One Piece. And after four emails, I've actually given up. And Toei just don't want the UK to have One Piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. From what I've gathered with One Piece, I don't know how it reacts to the others. I did a bit of digging myself. TV series-wise, that is Manga UK. I'm going to name them. Very, very, very stubborn with a license, because they believe that having One Piece on Crunchyroll or Funimation will affect DVD sales.
Fair point.
One Piece Film Gold is a thing of its own. That is kind of bouncing all over the place. And I believe, from what I've gathered, Universal have it because it's under the Funimation umbrella. Because it was treated as a different property to One Piece TV series.
So probably Universal has it then.
So Universal are getting a lot of Funimation stuff, but they might be the ones who have it, but I'm not sure. And when it comes to One Piece, this is going to be something that I'm going to bring up because I'm sick of Film Gold. Every other country is getting that. I don't know if it's now or if it's in a few weeks' time. And I've noticed that there's some Malaysian DVDs on eBay with the English sub.
Yeah.
So put it this way, if nobody wants to distribute One Piece Film Gold, I have no complaints or no qualms about getting a snidey copy of it. Because if you really wanted it to have it, you would have distributed it or you would have mentioned something about it by now.
That's the thing as well, because they promised a UK cinematic release.
Yeah.
It was promised to us. And this is after they had the whole, you know, big lush premiere in the hotel clad gold in Dubai. They got the premiere and we're sitting there like, oh, yeah, then where's ours?
Everyone's had it. Literally everybody, every other country in the who's like gets anime has had it. Russia's got it.
The only difference between us and like every other country is Brexit.
I think it's something to do with it's either Manga UK have it and don't think that it's marketable enough to have a proper release, or Universal have it, and because they're still quite new to the game in terms of things, I think they just haven't announced any plans to have it put out yet.
You know, if there's no way for people to legally obtain it, and like I say, I pay for my Funimation, I pay for Crunchyroll, I pay for basically everything. I run an anime convention, I support the industry, but if you're going to cut off all routes to a property that I'd like to watch, we're in the age of technology where, you know, a politician could crap the pants and within 2 seconds the world would know. And that's and that's the thing. The anime industry craps its pants, people want to see it.
Yeah.
If they're not going to monetize and make money out of it, then that's their problem. But other people will.
I do have a thing, like, see, if somebody wanted to see illegally stream Dragon Maid, then yeah, it's kind of like, well, just watch it on Crunchyroll. You can support them by that. And then they're like, yeah. But then it's like, on the other hand, it's like, yeah, there is stuff that I really do want to watch, but we have no legal way of obtaining it.
Yeah. If you look at older shows in particular, stuff that is no longer on Crunchyroll, for example, stuff that was never released in the UK on DVD, And now the only actual way for you to get hold of a DVD of that is to buy a bootleg one online or to stream it illegally online. Take a show like The Inland Sea Bride, Seto no Hanayome. I don't know. Is The Inland Sea Bride on Crunchyroll?
Nope. The only thing they've got on there is no image, and it just has a very, very brief Wikipedia article on that.
So if I wanted to watch that, where would I go to watch it?
Exactly. But that's fair enough. At the end of the day, there's no way to watch it. And it's just one of these things. It's like, yeah, we can complain about it, but something like that is probably never going to be picked up ever again. So
yeah,
going back to that One Piece film Gold, at the end of the day, if they know the fans are there, but the fact is radio silence on the entire thing for the UK, even if they turned around and said, look, we know that people want to see it. Unfortunately, we can't bring it. And then people will just be like, and then they'll just get on with it. But the problem is that there's that much radio on silence on stuff. It's like, well, I'm not going to buy this until this comes out. You know what I mean?
We can't understand, like, from the distributor's perspective. I mean, it's hard for them to obtain these licenses. I was at Dacon, and Andrew Partridge of Anime Limited, he was saying, and I believe he used like a picture to summarize the industry at the moment. And it's from How I Met Your Mother, where Robin's underneath our news desk table, just drinking wine, crying. And that's the industry, because for them now, the whole face of it's changed. Before, it used to be they'd be able to get the dub copies from Funimation, but Funimation's now got this packed with Crunchyroll. Funimation and Crunchyroll are going directly to big distributors now, like Universal or, you know, the big conglomerates. And, like, the smaller distributors are just getting cut from it. And smaller distributors can only get, like, the Japanese releases of certain properties, like movies, directly, and they've got to go direct now.
Mm.
That's why we're seeing the likes of Netflix and Amazon gaining a stronger foothold in anime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because these smaller distributors are now being left out.
See, I've got a different perspective on it. The one company that's actually approaching this in probably the way that's going to outlast the rest of them is MVM.
Yeah, they're going for all of, like, the... I wouldn't say they're not as well-known, but they're trying to go for, like...
MVM are focusing specifically on older shows and left-field shows, right?
Yeah.
The unknown stuff, the stuff that the other two companies are just completely ignoring. And I think that the other two companies, Anime Limited and Manga Entertainment, by ignoring this massive amount of content, you know, some of it is actually really good as well. By blatantly ignoring it, they're shooting themselves in the foot by only focusing on the popular titles, because at the end of the day, the popular titles are a flash in the pan. If you can't get the DVDs...
Looking at it from the business perspective, they've got to go for something that's certain to sell. But the mainstream titles are the certainty. Well, they're not so much as a sure thing these days, because there's that much, like we say, there's an oversaturation in so much.
If your goal is to make an immediate profit, then yeah, you're going to focus on the big names. Stuff like your Attack on Titans, your One Punch Mans, your Dragon Balls, stuff like that. That's fine. But Tony and the guys from MVM have been happily plodding along for quite a number of years now. And they have been happily plodding along by just releasing left field stuff and the lesser known stuff like that. And they've got their own little niche within a niche, which is really weird. Thing is, I know a lot of people who are massive fans of the stuff that MVM does, right? They treat MVM in the same way that film fans treat, say, Arrow Films, Arrow Video, and Eureka Masters of Cinema. You know, film fans love them because they released very oddball, very left-field stuff. And anime fans, a lot of them that I know, treat MVM the same. They love the stuff that MVM releases. If it's from MVM, they'll at least be looking at it and going, actually, I'm interested in that.
One thing I have noticed with MVM is that a lot of their catalogue kind of fits well with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just trying to find some of the stuff that random things I've got for MVM. And, like, looking at my shelf, I've got Girls on Panzer and Love Live. And those are stuff, like, if somebody likes one of them, they're most likely going to get the other one.
Exactly.
And looking at some of the other stuff, like Little Busters, that's kind of similar. It's not like exactly the same, but it's kind of like, if you like that, you'll probably like this too. Whereas Anime Limited is kind of like, yay, we got ReZero, but we also have Gundam, and we also have Bakano, which, if you like one of them, you may not like the other two.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. You've got this mass of titles that are very left field. I mean, you've got stuff that you can only get from MVM that you can't get from any other company, which is an interesting place to be at when you get right down to it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a good business model as well, because, like you say, the mainstream stuff, there's an oversaturation of it.
Yeah.
But the other companies like Manga and Anime Limited, they do good stuff as well. Anime Limited with the Scotland Loves Anime initiative.
I'm not saying that they don't have like bad things or anything. It just seems like MVM seem to go for the more niche stuff as opposed to just going for the popular stuff.
Well, let's put it this way.
Or the more well-known stuff, I would probably say.
A couple of things from... I've just got MVM's catalogue open, right? And a couple of the things that really stand out that MVM have basically managed to nab from Manga and Anime Limited. A Lull in the Sea, Arakawa Under the Bridge, Axel World, Bakemonogatari, Basilisk, Berserk, obviously because you've just watched the Berserk Blu-ray thing, Blade of the Immortal, which is now being made into a live-action movie, so the popularity of that is going to go up again, Fate Stay Night, Karen no Kyokai, Fate Zero, and Unlimited Blade Works as well. The series, I think. And did they have the movie as well? I think they did the movie as well.
I think they do, yeah.
Desert Punk. They've got both F, you know, The Tale of Melodies and The Tale of Memories. They've got both of those. Dusk Maiden of Amnesia. Familiar of Zero. These are all titles that are relatively well known. From the New World is an MVM release. Gantz is an MVM release.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, they've got Love Live. I mean...
Seems to be stuff that was mostly popular when I was starting to watch anime.
It might be a bit older, but when you get right down to it, what's wrong with that? There is a secondary option when it comes to the anime distribution in the UK.
Yeah.
Right? That is all the modern stuff, all the new stuff, and all the big titles. The companies can basically try and get as many of the big titles for Blu-ray, DVD as they want. But you can basically turn to the streaming on Crunchyroll and various other things for all of the modern anime. But then start looking at all... I mean, you have, what, 30 years of anime that you can basically cherry-pick from and get really cheap licenses for direct from Japan for release in the UK. And you're not really going to be taking too much of a risk. Do you remember how Anime Limited got started? By doing Kickstarters?
Yeah, I mean, they had... Right. Was it My Miracle, didn't they?
Yeah, they had My Miracle. They ran a Kickstarter for Gakko and Utopia Manabe Straight, which I love that show, by the way. And they were doing it like that, so they knew what they were going to sell was actually going to sell. And all I'm saying is you have all of these titles, so why don't these companies start saying, okay, we're looking at these. These are the potential titles that we want to release. Which ones are you interested in? Ask the people. Market research, you ask the people, but if you give them a strict set of options and don't let them deviate from that, then you get an accurate answer. When you ask them and give them and let them have an open answer, that's when you get problems.
That's when you get Weeby McWeeb face.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we take a break there?
Yeah.
Break. All right, okay. We'll be back in a few moments because we do have anime to talk about.
Hey, so films, those are certainly things, right? And if you want to listen to much better film analysis than that, listen to Cinema Eclectica, also on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Welcome back, and now it's time for some anime, and we're starting off with Mark?
Yeah, over the past few days I've been watching Wish Upon the Pleiades.
Pleiades. What is a Pleiades, Mark?
I don't know. It's like a little blobby thing. That's all I could assume it was.
Hang on. A little blobby
world, thing. It's a constellation, isn't it?
It's a constellation, yes.
In this series, it's a little blob that is actually an alien from a species called the Pleiadians, so... We're going to go with that for this.
Oh, before you start, I've got the definition up here. It's the seven daughters of Atlas turned into a group of stars in Greek mythology.
Is this a harem series then, since there's seven daughters?
No, it's not. it's a cute girls doing cute things anime. Now, I'm not going to lie, I'm not a huge fan of this kind of stuff. I like Love Live. I like Girls and Panzer. I liked a few of the others, like Lucky Star. But overall, I'm not a huge fan of this kind of stuff. So basically, the whole of this is about a young girl called Subaru.
Is her surname Impreza?
But yeah, Subaru is Japanese for Pleiades. Like Mr. Pleiades in Robotics Notes.
So basically, she is a little girl who is into watching the stars. And one day she goes to the observation room of a school to try and view the stars with a telescope in hand. And then she opens the door and she gets like transported to this weird little fountain area. I can't understand it. It's just like, there was just like a fountain behind it, and it was supposed to be like, oh yeah, that's not normal. So yeah, that was a thing. And she met this young boy who kind of taught her about the stars and stuff like that. Then all of a sudden she meets this little blobby alien, and she gets selected by him to join his group of magical girls. And so the magical girls kind of fly around and collect stars because plot. And yeah, they need to collect the stars for whatever reason in order to get home, apparently. And then this other mask, no, it's not nice, no, a mask, he's just got a horns and he's like dressed up as a devil type thing. And a boy kind of stops them from doing it, from collecting the stars, because he wants the stars for whatever reason. And it's kind of just that. It's kind of that. There's not a huge amount to this series, I didn't feel. There was just kind of like, once she meets all these different witch characters, magical girl characters, we'll have a few episodes dedicated to them. And then it's just kind of like rinse and repeat through the whole of the series. It doesn't start getting interesting until the very end, like the last few episodes, when, surprise, surprise, the antagonist boy was the same boy she met in the observatory that time. It turns out, like, he met her when she was they were both very, very young, and he is actually dying of something. And yeah, I'm not gonna lie, this was a very difficult one to actually sit down and watch, just because I thought it was boring us out.
The way you're describing it, the first thing I thought when you were describing it was, this sounds a bit like Cardcaptor.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's because it's a magical girl show. It kind of just feels, it's like, yeah, this is a magical girl show. There's literally not much more to it.
No, but that's what I mean.
Try and throw a little bit more towards the end to try and shake things up a little bit. Yeah. But it's like, it's still kind of like, yeah, this is just cute girls doing cute things, not cute girls doing interesting things like we've seen in other series. I suppose if you're like proper into the magical girl stuff, then you might get a little bit more humour out of it. It's kind of like, you know, when you see some series where the comedy is the cute girl getting bonked on the head, or
yeah,
something
slightly
embarrassing happens to the cute girl, and everyone's like, oh yeah, that's really funny. And it's like, that's kind of the humour it is, and I'm not really a fan of that.
The cute girls doing cute things in cute ways thing. Whenever I come across a show like that, there's a couple of shows that I automatically compare it to. Number one is K-On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and number two is the one that I regard as better than K-On, because it is, in a lot of ways, Ichigo Mashimaro, or Strawberry Marshmallow. And the reason I regard that as better than K-On isn't in terms of the enjoyment. It's more on the technical side of things. You have these kind of grade school girls, but they're behaving exactly like girls of that age would behave.
Yeah, that's the
thing. It's not really anime-fied in any real way. It's basically, this is the kind of thing that you could take from anime and play it as a live-action thing, right? And you could get a bunch of little girls and have them playing these characters in exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm. The whole space part of it is quite interesting. Like you said, obviously it is. Obviously, it is named after like constellations and stuff like that. They do discuss like stuff like light speed calculations. I mean, it's not like over the top. It kind of feels like they studied a bit more like astronomy and stuff like that to try and write this story. Like you said, it's one of those series. It's just kind of like, you watch it and it's all right. I mean, the animation part of it is pretty well done. It's I was quite impressed with some scenes, but it tended to always be the scenes where they were in space, and it was like,
yeah,
yeah, this is actually really well done. And considering that came off Gundam, which is also set in space, it kind of like felt a lot more well put together space than that was, and that's Gundam.
So are you looking forward to your Magical Girl Gundam crossover now?
I'm sure that's already been done.
I don't think it has.
Going back to Playheads, if you're really into the Magical Girl kind of thing, you'll probably get a lot more mileage out of this than I did. And like I said, I probably did go into it with a bit of a stigma attached to it, but it just wasn't something for me.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to who's next?
Me.
Cool. What you got, Lewis?
I've got Ergo Proxy, which is... it's one of those sort of dystopian future type things. And it kind of comes off initially as a future sort of utopia type place. And this is kind of like what the future could be like based on the way humanity was going. The main character's name is Vincent Law, and it follows him. He's like, he emigrated to the main place, I think it's called Rondo or something, which is like a big sort of city in the sky.
Yeah.
And he's there, he's working as like someone who works on the automaton robots in the series called Autoraves, I think they're called. And eventually some stuff happens. I say eventually, it's pretty early in the whole scheme of things, but he ends up sort of outside, and then he realizes there's more to the world than what the society is in sort of told him. But from there, there's like a lot of twists and turns, and a lot of stuff happens. And I thought it was very interesting. The characters are quite good. Pretty early in the show, the main character develops a friendship, I guess, with an Autorave that once belonged to one of the citizens. And at one point, you know, she sort of starts following him around, but it has this virus which makes them autonomous rather than like following to programming.
Yeah.
So it kind of becomes a story of a boy, I guess, or a man, and his sort of companion that has an innocence to them, sort of just trying to figure out what's going on in the world. And there's a lot of characters, a lot of stuff happens. I think the animation style is quite good. Like, initially, it starts off really good, but because it's quite a long series, there was like an episode or two where the animation was really off model.
Yeah.
And it still kept like the whole sort of, in terms of the colors, I guess, and the kind of environment style, it still kept that, so it still looked okay in that regard, but the animation was really off model at one point, and then there are some bits that are really good. But as a series, I quite enjoyed it. I think it's really sort of detailed. Like, it tends to like show things a lot. It uses quite a lot of interesting techniques to tell story in various points.
You mentioned it's a dystopia. Is it like a cyberpunk dystopia?
Yeah.
So how does it compare with like Psycho Pass or something like, or Ghost in the Shell or something like that?
I haven't watched Ghost in the Shell, but compared to Psycho Pass, it's like, it has a similar feel to it in terms of like being a sort of cyberpunk dystopia thing, the art style being quite muted, using a lot of like light colors, and like the characters tend to be like quite pale, and then the backgrounds are quite gray. So you've got that sort of almost film noir kind of contrast to it, which looks quite nice. So it's got that sort of comparatively to Psycho Pass on the surface, it feels quite similar. But I feel like the plot itself is very different because the main story revolves around like finding the proxy, which is a monster that's being hidden by the government. And I'd say it's dystopian because the government appears to be sort of autonomous beings that control everything, but they're hiding information about the outside and the proxy. And the story kind of revolves around what's going on out there and finding the truth of the world they're in, rather than Psycho Pass, which is more about how people interact and relate to the society they're in.
The weird thing is, the way you've described the story, to me, it sounds like a combination of Crumbshelled Rejoice, Sands of Destruction, and Chobits, weirdly enough, because you've got the whole boy and his doll type thing going on, which isn't really a good description of either Ergo Proxy or Chobits, I'll admit. So, recommend from you then?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it quite a lot.
Cool. Right, so, finally, Tucky.
I watched Digimon Adventures Try, and the important part of this is they tried.
Did they really?
So, let's take you back, wibbly wobbly lines, flashback to 1997. There were two things that ruled the playground. One was Pokemon cards, and two were people with Tamagotchis.
Yep.
And then Tamagotchis became Digimon. And 20 years later, they've decided, you know what? Let's go back to the original cast of Digimon. And, I mean, the thing is, we had Digimon Adventure, then Digimon Adventure 02, Digimon TMS, Digimon Frontier, Digimon Savers, brackets Digimon Data Squad, Digimon X-Ross Wars, Digimon Fusion, Digimon Adventure Tri, is like where we are now, like Digimon Universe. So, this was a DVD from Manga Entertainment. I believe it's as speaking, it's still to be released sometime later this month. It was good to get a preview, I suppose, of like an upcoming title. But yeah, again, going back to the discussion before, trying to save the UK anime industry, one of the things that the main companies are doing are they're bringing back the nostalgia, give the fans a good old shower of nostalgia.
They did that with the Digimon series, the first Digimon series, which I really enjoyed. They had the Transformers movie. What else did they bring out, Tucky?
They brought out Pokemon movies, 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was that Hooper movie as well.
Yep.
They're getting a lot of the Power Rangers stuff as well.
Yeah, the Power Rangers.
Things that are coming back into fashion from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is another, like, just one of them things, because apparently people can't move on and they haven't had closure. Also Yu-Gi-Oh, which I got to watch, but that's for another show. We go into this and the DVD, I mean, yeah, expect usually they don't really do much on DVDs anymore. You used to have like director's commentary, the cast drunk commentary, some stranger on the street commentary, the pet mascots commentary, and you used to have all that. It used to be a fantastic like world of DVD where it's like you can listen to it in English, Spanish, Italian.
Oh yeah,
and like yeah, I mean you still get the language options.
But
I mean,
but the
like,
language options
to, like,
are Japanese and English now.
Yeah, you used to get like stereotypical. Like, you know, you can listen to it in Geordie if you like. And, you know, all these extras in DVDs, they're missing them now. And this one was every time I get a DVD and I'm looking like, oh, well, it's a DVD. It's not streaming. Let's see what extras. And this is where they're missing it. You release a DVD, you have extras. That's what sets it apart from streaming. If you have your DVDs just playing, then people can just go and watch it on streaming and you can lose out on extra revenue.
This is true.
They only had two extras on this Digimon Tri DVD, and one of them was getting a behind-the-scenes look at the voice actors who worked on the movies, which was very interesting. Interesting because Christina V, obviously a former SunnyCon guest, she was involved in it. She's delightful. And you can see with all the other voice actors, I mean, Vic wasn't there, who voiced Matt, but the lower-tier voice actors, the ones who stayed humble, they were in it. And you got a little behind-the-scenes view of what they get up to and how they do the voices. But it's weird. It's weird to see some of the voices, like especially the ones who do the voices of the Digimon, when they stand there and it's like, oh, this 54-year-old woman, and she does this cute little cat voice. And it's like, wow, didn't see that coming from that.
See, you make it sound like Springwatch for voice actors.
The lesser spotted Todd Habercorn crawls into the studio. He adjusts the mic, but the engineer has been alerted to this.
No. You need more Bellamy in your voice.
No.
I mean David Bellamy.
I'm not that talented. I can do Gazza when he's drunk, and that's about my talent.
Oh, Gazza doing wildlife documentaries, there's the thing.
So let's say, like, Pet, so I've got my fishing rod and my four cans. Let's go down to the course and see what we can catch.
We're going to catch that fog on the tide.
I'm going to stop myself there. So Digimon Tri was amazing. it was amazing that it's been brought back out. I personally don't feel that there was a need to revisit. I mean, I know I'm not a Digimon fan, to be honest. I'm all about the Pokemon. So,
we know.
For me, watching it, yeah, watching this was, it's like, yes, oh, look, it's all the original cast. Yes, oh, my childhood. No Devimon, by the way, which was disappointment. But when you get to see it, the story, the plot line progresses, and they've all grown up. And in this 20-year period, the whole cast have, like, aged about 5 years.
That was my exact feelings when I was watching that. It was just like, yeah, they're now 5 years older.
They've forcibly caged them in the high school setting because for some reason Japanese anime, let's just stick it in a high school setting because it's relatable.
Hang on, Pokemon's no better. Ash Ketchum has been the same age for how long? I want to see high school Ash Ketchum when he realises that his mum's having a sordid affair with Professor Oak. And Professor Oak is actually his daddy that apparently went missing years ago. That's why him and Gary don't get on.
Anyway, Digimon try. They've moved on, they've progressed, and they've actually gone on with lives. And watching it, as you watch it, as the plot progresses, I say plot. It draws out. It really draws out. They've got the animation is up to standard. They've gone for an interesting art style.
I like your phrasing, the animation is up to standard.
Well, it is. Because back then in 1997, you had 4 kids and whatnot and all that jazz. And it was kind of clunky, but now they've brought it up and they've turned the brightness down a bit.
Ah, I see.
It's a bit cleaner and it's a little darker. It doesn't really do much for the plot because the plot's, it's drawn out. It's like Ty, like, oh, I'm getting on with life. Oh, I sure do miss my old friend in another world. His teacher's sitting there doing calligraphy and whatnot, going, aye, whatever you say, mate. So, out of nowhere, bang, bad Digimon's back in the world. All of a sudden, all the old team's back together. And you kind of feel like it's inconvenience in their lives and it's inconvenience in your life watching it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, Joe had his homework to do. I mean, slipping back in school and that last thing he needs is, like, you know, Digimon trouble. Ty's just trying to get mates to turn up to his football match because he's trying to make a life of himself. Nah, it's not going to happen. Matt's still broody and stands to the side doing nouts, sounding like Vic Mignogna. It's like they've all got lives. Izzy's got a crush on the cowboy hat one who's now like a fashion model or something. And it's like they all had lives. They moved on with it. And it kind of feels like they've been forcibly dragged back in front of the cameras for the perverse view and pleasure of a minority of Digimon fans. That's how the movie felt for me. I'm all for nostalgia. Yes, sure. You know, they're bringing out the Pokemon I Choose You movie. Where it's going to be like Ash's first story retold. Ah, that's all right. I mean, I'm not going to go like overboard with it. But with like Digimon, I don't think this was needed. I don't think you really need to, like, oh, they've grown up. But look, the Digimon are still here somehow. It's like, no, just let them get on with their lives. Let Ty practice his football or Matt have his band and Izzy sitting on computers being weird, talking French or whatnot. You know, let them go on and live life. It feels really forced to have the Digimon just appear again. Like, so you get your nostalgia kick out of it. You get that Digimon, Digivolve into Ultimate. You know, the music. And they've upped the graphics a bit. They actually use, like, proper CG. So you get to see, like, cool little Digivolve things, and it's like, oh, they used to do that, didn't they? And that's as far as the movie goes. Without trying to spoil it more, like, stuff happens, and it's really inconvenient for them.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same when I watched it. I mean, going back to the whole Digimon transformation Digivolve thing, or whatever they call it, it felt really, really dragged out, didn't it?
It's like,
they must have spent about 10 minutes of the whole thing just going through each of the Digimon just
Digivolving. It stayed with the traditional Digimon, which was like 20-minute episode, 15 minutes of Digivolve and 5 minutes of rubbish.
Yep.
That's the whole movie. 3 quarters of Digivolving and like the last quarter of, well, what am I watching? Why am I watching?
It really felt like the focus on all the stuff I hated about Digimon.
But that's what the fans wanted. And when you see on the extras and the voice actors are like, we've got a really good Digimon like fan base and whatnot. It's like, no, mate, you're just happy to see somebody cosplaying a character that you voiced once.
Do you know what puzzles me, right? This is kind of going back to what we were talking about in the first half of the show. The titles that could potentially sell in the UK. There's a few movies that came out in Japan that never really got released in the West. They were the remake type things of the Nanoha series. And I've been waiting for years for Nanoha to be released on DVD or Blu-ray in the UK, but no one will.
And
no, the reason why I'm bringing it up is because they brought out Digimon Try, which, by your reckoning, Tucky, is it worth buying?
I feel sorry for Manga Entertainment for buying the rights to it.
Why not just put that money towards Nanoha, which I'm actually going to buy?
This was another like kick in the nards for it because this isn't just one standout movie. This is, I think it's like 5 or 6 movies.
Yeah, that's my point.
This was the start.
Yeah.
I've watched the first movie. It's dragged on. It hasn't built anything.
Yeah.
This is the thing. If you're going to build up in a like episodic format, if you're going to build up to something, start strong. Get me attention. Start and build up. Don't just let us like sit there and go, aye, this used to happen. Oh, well, I regret watching this. I'm going to go and do some work now.
Did you notice that they just ignored the whole of the second Digimon thing?
They've ignored everything.
All the characters are now the ages they were when the second Digimon thing was happening.
Yep.
And then you don't see any of the characters or anything from season two, and it's like, are they just pretending it didn't exist? I mean, it wasn't particularly great. I didn't really enjoy it, but it still happened.
Well, this is the thing. Digimon Adventure 2, this is set 3 years after that.
Was it after, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 3 years after, but like I say, you got six more of this to come out. And by all means, if you're a big Digimon fan and you love the nostalgia and you've got no better to do with yourself, go and watch it and try and hook yourself on it. Try and get hooked on it. Manga Entertainment need the money because they're going to be making a loss on this, to be all in all honesty. And the thing is, I think that they're doing it on Hulu and Crunchyroll. They're going to be streaming.
Yeah.
The same day as the premiere of Japanese theaters. So it's like, you can watch it as it's released, streamed. I mean, I think they'll have the subtitles. So you can watch it on Crunchyroll when it's released, or, and I have no idea how much they're going to charge for this DVD, or you're going to have a possibility of £25 to £40 for this DVD, which has two extras on.
And 20 quid for the Blu-ray.
Yep.
Is it? Oh.
Or £15.99 for the DVD.
Oh, well, that's still bad, but it's cheaper, I suppose. Yep. But if this is their answer to celebrate the anniversary of Digimon, if this is their answer, it's pretty naff. That's the polite version of it, because I could say so much more. And like I say, I'm just a fan. I'm not a big fan. But you could have put your money into something so much better than bringing this out.
Yeah.
Because it's an inconvenience to the characters. It's an inconvenience to me knowing about it. It's an inconvenience to all those fans out there who have to watch this and then be told, oh, well, there's another 4 or 5 episodes after.
Do you know what I would have actually done with this? All this Digimon Adventure try? I would have actually aged them 20 years.
Yeah. See, I've been saying this for ages. I'm tired of always having it thrown in my face that adults are absolutely useless and only high school kids or school kids can save the world.
This is where they missed out on it, because if the characters had aged more and had a bit more experience, I would say, Ty, what if his soccer career didn't go well? What if he had an injury and then he ends up turning to an addiction of drugs or something? I'd watch the hell out of that.
Yeah, but it's true. A lot of the stuff that they do, and it's like, oh, Ty's career isn't going very well. And it's like, yeah, but if he was like 20 years older, then that would have been so much more relatable for the people who were young and that back then.
But the thing is, there's actually something in what you're saying, because they've actually done research into this, right? The whole idea of arrested development when it comes to characters in fiction. I mean, you look at something like The Simpsons or Family Guy, people actually leave it after a while and never, ever come back to it. And the main reason is because those characters are in a permanent state of stasis. Whereas if you have a series where the characters age as you do, right, people are actually a lot more invested in it, especially if it happens over a period of time. So you could literally have Digimon 20 years later and have the characters 20 years older.
Yeah,
and people would really get into that.
You stay with Britain, right?
Yeah.
The most popular shows on TV, Emmerdale, EastEnders,
Coronation Street,
Hollyoaks, all them characters, you grow with them. You
exactly.
can see them as child characters, and then they fire the child actor because they suck, and then they bring in an adult character, and like, oh yeah, this is old Timmy, Oh, you mean like little Timmy is like, all of a sudden he's grown like 16 years, but he's grown.
Yeah.
At least these characters have to have human traits. They
yeah.
have no human traits. They have hobbies, after school club, and oh no, my exams are going poor.
In order for it to change, you need to have that fundamental shift that I was talking about earlier. And if you look at, say, animation from the Western world, right? We have in, say, Disney, Pixar, I mean, look at Despicable Me. Right, you have the three little girls, and then you have Gru. And Gru is a full-grown adult, right? Like it or not, he is. He's the main character of a major motion picture. But you go across to Japan, how many main characters are there who are full-grown adults?
Not many, but I think it's like any other shift in the zeitgeist. They tend not to just happen like out of nowhere.
I don't think it's going to happen in Japan. See, the thing is, they're too set in their ways. You would need a fundamental shift in their mentality, and that would have to coincide with them making more shows that are targeted specifically at a Western audience.
You got a point there. I mean, I think like the reason why we're getting more mature, I guess, high school characters is because I think there are some people who are trying to go against the norm a little bit, but they still want to appeal to the mainstream.
But the thing is, Lewis, that's how you end up with shows like The Irregular at the Magic High School, right? You have a character who's basically a special officer in the military, and at the end of the series, this is a spoiler if you haven't seen it, but at the end of the series, he basically commits genocide. He has no problem killing people, cutting their arms off, or disintegrating them outright, and he is completely cold-blooded and ruthless. But the thing is, he has reasons to be like that.
Yeah.
But those reasons, a lot of people looked at it and went, oh, he's too perfect to be a real character. Thing is, it actually explains, as part of the story, how he's ended up like that. Right? And that's actually a fundamental part of the story. You're like, but it tells you why he's like this. He's basically not a normal person in the first place because his mom and his aunt decided to operate on his brain when he was a kid. That's why he's like this. I mean?
You've got an explanation. You've got... anime, I guess, like by Western standards, is known for like telling and not showing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of decent anime out there that does like show and not tell, but then the fans completely miss that. And they go, this doesn't make sense. And it's like, well, it's been shown that, you know, this trait in this youthful character is justified given the context of this universe or this show.
Yeah.
Because it has shown it. It hasn't told you, but it's shown it.
Anyway, we were talking about Digimon Tri, Tucky.
This would have been a better movie if they had aged the characters appropriately. You're looking at the Japanese industry, and it is full of high schoolers. And, I mean, there's hope. I mean, if you've read Inuyashiki, Old Man with Cancer anime, it becomes like a robot.
Old Man Astro Boy, as I call it.
See, it's a storyline like that. Sure, it's got your fantasy. He's transformed into a robot by aliens. But before that, family didn't love him. He's worked his whole life. He looks older than he should. You know, he's got cancer. Fantastic character development. Excellent depth.
Well, I mean, one of the best things about Inuyashiki was that whole bit where he's basically saved somebody and he's crying because even though he's a machine, he still has human emotions and he's crying because...
He knows his humanity, that's his proof of humanity, saving people.
Yeah.
And that's the extra level. That's an emotional depth that the shows like Digimon will never ever hit. They'll never even scrape it because you've got the same characters from 20 years ago, just slightly taller, wearing the same stuff. I mean, they even give Ty his goggles back and it's like, oh, look, you've got your goggles. I made these for you. It's like, oh, great. All the fans will love that. and that's basically it. And say you need character development. You've had 20 years to develop this character. What have you done? Oh, we've just given him a different suit and bigger goggles.
There is one character who does try and change his clothes. There's a whole thing about Izzy because he's sitting there, he made an app or something that he can change clothes just because he wants to like impress Mimi.
Yeah, there's your character development. That's where Digimon really like falters. You've had 20 years to develop a character, you've done nout. You've had 20 years to develop a decent plot, you've done nout. The voice acting's great, the animation, it's better, but it's up to standard. That's fine. And you've got your nostalgia effect because Digimon, digital monsters, Digimon fighting heroes, or whatever it goes. I know I said it wrong, but you know the theme tune. Digivolve. Digitoo Ultimate. So you've got your nostalgia with that. It's like, oh yeah, I heard that jingle 20 years ago and I can hear it again if I buy this DVD. This is the thing, because I really wanted it to be good. I wanted it to be good because Digimon, it's one of them ones where it's like, oh, popular mainstream anime. This was part of my Weeb starter kit. Digimon was that for like the 1990, late 90s kids.
Yeah.
And you wanted to be good because you wanted to stand the test of time, but it hasn't. There's so much potential to do something with it rather than just drag it out and like polish it, really. It's just a more polished version, and there's nothing really to it. It's got no depth, and that's the disappointing part about it. Would I watch it again? Probably not. Unless I'm tied myself into reviewing the next 5 or 6 episodes.
I think you have as well.
So, yeah, it's a living. But at the moment, Reunion, the first movie, Reunion, it hasn't went well for me. And I hope they can knock it up a level, really. The only part I enjoyed about it was where it's like, Angemon! It's like, yeah, Angemon! And that was it. Because Angemon was the best of the Digimon for me.
So it's not a recommend from you then?
It hurts us to say that's not a recommend, though. That's a thing. It's one of those things. You've got to be critical of these animes. And this is, like you say, it's from my childhood.
But the thing is, Tucky, right, you can tell how much a person cares about a particular thing by how critical they are of it and the type of criticism they put forward towards a particular thing, especially when you're talking about a medium. I love animation. Absolutely love animation. Which is one of the reasons why I tend to be quite harsh, because these things are coming from a medium I love, and you're the same. You tend to be quite harsh because these are things are coming from a medium that you absolutely love. Because you love the industry, you want to see the industry do well and actually put out good stuff, good content. So when it comes to this sort of stuff, it's disappointing to you.
And I can understand from the distributor side, I can understand Manga Entertainment, because they have to make money and Digimon's like a mainstream thing. But this isn't what the fans really want. Well, this isn't really what I want as a fan. And like I say, Crunchyroll can get it. So spending all that money when your company really needs to like be more frugal and be wise with what they invest in. And I know Digimon's got the fan base over here.
Yeah,
it's
but
just
the thing is,
that...
Why spend
when I'm watching it, it doesn't do anything for me.
Why spend the money on Digimon? Is my question. Yeah. Is my first question. I mean, you have other franchises that could really start selling in the UK. Hell, why not bring Doraemon over, or Sergeant Frog, or Kochikame, or something like that? There's loads of franchises, long running, really well known, really popular, that you could bring over.
We should start our own distribution company.
Yeah. Hell yes.
I mean, it's really old as well. Looking back, they used to have a game that used to work on Windows 95.
Well, Digimon is a franchise. Digimon Tri came out originally in 2015, wasn't it?
I believe so. But just looking here, the next one's... Actually, the second one's been out. So it was released on March the 12th, 2016.
Yeah, I think in Japan, they've got the first four.
Yep.
Aye, the first four's out. Aye.
And I think there's another two still to come. But like, this is what I was saying earlier on. The gaps between what's stuff actually coming out and when we're actually getting it.
Yeah.
At least 1 or 2 years, isn't it?
But that's my point. That's why I said, what's the point in us chasing after something that's a couple of years out of date? Why don't companies bite the bullet in the UK and say, okay, we're not going to focus on these anymore, so you guys can watch these online. We're going to focus on bringing these quality titles that haven't been released in the UK or haven't been released in the UK recently, and we're going to bring those over instead. I know loads of people who, if you brought out Oh My Goddess, both seasons, as a box set, and had a separate box set for like the OVAs from the 90s, they would buy it in a heartbeat.
Oh my God. Oh My Goddess. That's a huge one.
Yeah.
That one, Macross. I mean, I'd go for Appleseed as well if they brought that out again.
When you get right down to it, the people who have money are the people with jobs, not the people at school. The people with jobs are usually in their 20s. Early 20s onwards, so say 22, 23, post-university, yeah?
Well, I've been to 18-plus conventions. I've traded at 18-plus conventions.
Yeah.
And when you're sitting there, the thing is, in a normal convention, we had this Miku figure, and it was quite a large one, so the RRP of it was about £180.
Yep.
And Donna like got on to us like, no way, we're going to sell that. And we went to a few normal conventions, and people just walk past like, no, that's way too much for me. And no. And they'll give you like a disgusted look as well. Say, like, what are you charging that for? 18-plus convention, I believe, was AmiCon 2012.
Yeah.
And within the first 5 minutes, dude walked in, saw it, loved it, bought it.
And how old was this dude?
He was like about late 20s,
see
early
what I mean?
30s.
There's one point right there. Who's got the ready cash?
It was just like cash, bang.
Yeah.
Not even bothering with it. Cash in hand, take the figure, huge smile on his face. And it was a beautiful statuette as well.
That's basically proving my point. The anime industry needs to stop catering to kids and start cater to adults.
I think that they need to do it in equal doses. get the new stuff, but why not try and get some of the new stuff while alongside getting some of the old stuff as well?
I'm not saying they shouldn't try and get the new stuff. I'm saying that they should have less of an emphasis on getting the new stuff. Take some of the pressure off themselves.
Yeah.
You know, by focusing on getting the older stuff that's easier to get, and actually the licenses are cheaper to get as well.
Yeah.
So let everybody else scrabble around for the new stuff.
Well, somebody will pick it up, won't they?
Exactly. Someone will pick it up. And if no one picks it up, then basically the license gets cheaper because no one picks it up. They go, oh, why did no one pick this up? Because you're charging too much, so we didn't want it. We went for this instead. What they're going to do?
That's the lifeline that they could give themselves if they put the effort into it. And like you say, it's so easy as just asking the fans for what they want.
Exactly.
You've got the customers there. You've got your social network. So basically you can just like ponder on, oh, should I get this? It's like, no need to ponder. I have the internet. Within 5 seconds, you can get like about 75% of decent feedback and 25% of memes.
Yep.
And even that, you're sorted.
Yep.
And that's what I feel they should be doing. Like Mark's touched on, sometimes they'll say, oh, we're releasing this, and then you get radio silence.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I understand that distributors, it's busy work and they don't have time to sit on Facebook 24/7. But just take some time, give a bit customer focus.
Anime in the UK, because it's been so niche, it has always been driven by the fans, a lot more so than in other countries, right? And for some reason, the distributors in the UK have completely ignored or overlooked that particular aspect of it. And you've got to remember, back when we didn't have fan subs or subs or stuff like that, back during the VHS days, or the dark days as I call them, when I had to get bootleg VHSs to watch stuff that I wanted to watch that was coming in from Japan, because we didn't have the internet, we didn't have streaming or anything like that, we didn't have DVD releases we had the stuff coming from manga, right? But during that time, it was the fans who were driving the sales of everything. And we had stuff like, I mean, Tucky, I gave you those manga magazines and the newsletters that I got from the Manga Club when they were actually...
Oh, yeah, the old Manga Club. They used to have a fan club.
Yeah.
That's how it used to be done. In the back of your comics or in the middle of your comics, or just as like a little leaflet in your AD 2000 comics, you had a little drop-out thing like, oh, Manga Entertainment have this, and they'd give you a list. You wouldn't know what the hell they were selling, but you knew it was anime. So. Yeah.
Exactly. And they used to give you these little newsletters and these little catalogs, and they used to, you know, give you information updates and stuff like that they send you for free.
Poorly Xeroxed fanzines.
Yeah. But that's how it was done. I'm not saying we go back to that.
No, by no means. If you look on YouTube, there's a documentary from 1994 where Jonathan Ross looks at anime.
Yeah.
And you see at how much, I mean, it was so much hard work back then.
Yes, it was.
So much hard work.
Yes, and it was.
When you see old people at conventions and that, you can see like a slightly bemused look on the face. And you know for a fact that they're saying in their head, the youth haven't had it so good. Because they know how hard it was back then.
Now you know what the expression on my face, whatever I'm at SonyCon, is.
There was fan dubs where people had to sit with their own VHS recording, using their own voice to dub over, because there was no Funimation.
Yeah.
There was no 4Kids. You had to sit in your dank basement trying to lip sync your own voice, even every voice in an anime, to that character.
Oh,
and
no.
That was the dedication, the level of dedication. And the thing is, these tapes used to be passed around fan to fan.
Yep.
And it's kind of like seedy and underworldy when you look back at it like that. But
that's all we had.
The amount of fun that you could have with it as well.
Yeah. Oh, did you ever investigate the bad subs from around that time?
I've tried to get hold of a VHS.
The dodgy subs from around that time. The dodgy subs from around that time were hilarious. They were really good.
And people used to make their own EMVs with VHS. And there's one from the Studio Ghibli movie. Oh, where she's Little Witch.
Kiki's Delivery Service. Yeah.
Don't know why it took us so long. And somebody made an EMV on VHS of Kiki's Delivery Service. I think it's on YouTube. It's that good. Somebody put it from VHS onto YouTube.
Cool.
So have a look for Kiki's Delivery Service. Every little thing she does is magic. And that EMV, by rights, the best EMV made in all the history. This is before you had Bodies, before you had Linkin Park. This EMV was the shit.
And on that note, I think we're at the end of the show. All of our shows are available on iTunes, Audioboom, and on the internet in general. So if you're listening on iTunes, then subscribe, or on Audioboom, subscribe as well. It'll keep you up to date. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. So until next time on Keyframe, I have been Rob.
I've been Mark.
I've been Lewis.
I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.